Good morning, good morning. We are dancing in with Soul Mikasa, Mano Dibango. This is Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C, right here in the place to be, CJSF Radio 90.1, with your Friday Speak Up Show. Have we got a treat in store for you.
Good morning, good morning. This is Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C, here in the place to be, CJSF Radio 90.1 in Burnaby, BC, streaming worldwide at cjsf.ca. Today, I'm continuing with our series on three P's and two C's, passion, project, purpose, and a cause that our guest is involved in. Today, my guest is Tim Dawson. He is a double bass player, and he is part of the Toronto Symphony. Now, he has a fantastic, interesting purpose, which we're going to travel along as I talk with him. Good morning, Tim. Say hello to our audience.
Good morning, Charlotte, and it's wonderful to be with you this morning across the country. 3 hours different from you, I think.
Right, right. The Toronto Symphony, how long have you been involved with that?
Well, I'm in my second last year before retirement. I've been with the orchestra for 43 years. I joined them when I was a baby. And I can't believe the time has just flown by. And so I'm enjoying what I call a 2 years and out retirement process. So this year and next year, I play approximately half the season. So it gives me sort of a taste of what the afterlife will be like. And I'm staying as busy as possible during this time. So.
It sounds like music has been part of your life since you were a baby. Do you think music is your purpose in life, or how is it related to your purpose in life?
Oh, it's been everything. It's changed my life in just the best possible ways. I grew up outside of Edmonton. We were literally in the woods. And my dad had, well, at one time we had two pianos in the house. And my dad was an amateur church organist. So music was everything. We didn't have a television. There was always sing-alongs, family sing-alongs, whenever guests came for any event. My mom loved to entertain. Everybody had to go in and sing around the piano, and it didn't matter if you could sing or not, because my dad believed that everybody could sing, and you know, you might not want to listen to it, but everybody can sing, and I totally agree with that idea. So I was surrounded with music from the very beginning, and I think my association with music is that it's joy. You know, I love my dad the best when he was playing music. And so it's a wonderful association for me. So to have that become my profession is just a dream come true.
Have you always played the bass? Or how did that happen to be your favorite?
No, you know, I was so lucky because, you know, I took piano lessons. I had a piano teacher that used to whack my knuckles if I played a wrong note, and it was no fun. And I dropped out of piano, you know, as soon as I could. But then when I was 12 years old, I found that somehow I got a magazine, a science magazine, that said, build your own baritone guitar. Well, you know, I've never even heard of a baritone guitar before or since. But I built this darn thing, and it needed a fingerboard, and we didn't know where to go. So my mom found a guitar maker in Edmonton that helped me with that. Well, it turns out he was a fantastic jazz and classical guitarist, and that led to lessons on classical guitar, which I adored. And but then this program at the University of Alberta for the students that were going to be music teachers, they had a thing called MELAB, or Music Education Laboratories, where kids could show up at the age of 12, 13, and choose any instrument they wanted. And they would get lessons, and they'd play in an ensemble. So I wanted to play the flute, and I went in looking for the flute, but they sent us off to different rooms to hear various instruments being demonstrated. And I happened to wander by an open door, and there was a dude in there playing Country Garden's Pizzicato on the double bass. And I thought, well, that was good. But then I came out still looking for the flute room, but they called us all back, lined us up according to height. I was at the end of the row because I was the tallest kid. And then they come down and they look at your hands. They look at your teeth for embouchure, for playing woodwind instruments. So they got to me and they looked me up and down and they looked at my hands and they said, "Do you want to play the bass?" And I just seen one, so I said, "Okay." So it was the easiest and best decision of my entire life, because I would have been a terrible flute player. So the bass has been with me ever since.
Wow, what a thing. Imagine them looking at your teeth. It's like, okay, you get a physical before you get your instrument.
Well, it's important because, like, especially for trumpet, you know, a trumpet, French horn, tuba, like, you need a good, strong jaw, you know, like, so, and then, you know, for bass, if it helps if you have big hands, and I happen to have big hands.
But also, apparently, a big heart, that some of what you're doing with your music is working to help others.
Well, you know, playing in an orchestra, the schedule is not, it's not like a 9-to-5 job. You know, your listeners might be shocked to hear that our contract calls for us to play, I think it's 19 and a half hours per week, which sounds like nothing, but it's actually time. We have to show up at rehearsals totally prepared. So the musicians in an orchestra spend hours preparing their music away from rehearsals. So when you show up at the first rehearsal, you're not looking for notes. You know the notes. And then together we can learn the interpretation of the piece and perfect it, you know, playing together. So there's a fair bit of time, you know, on your own. So from the very beginning, I've been involved in organizing chamber groups. And that's led to some wonderful things, which I can tell you about.
Well, Tim, I'm happy that you had a better opportunity to be selected for an instrument than I did. When I was in junior high school, they said it was the day that some of us were going to get instruments. And they went down and they had a room full of violins. I wanted to play the saxophone. They said it was not feminine. It was not a feminine instrument, so I did not get to even touch the saxophone.
Oh, isn't that crazy? You know, the times have changed so much, you know, because they said that about brass instruments too. You know, women didn't play trumpet or tuba or trombone. Well, now, oh my God, it's
yes,
some of the best players in the world are ladies, you know, so it's totally false. And at one time, orchestras were all men. I studied with a man who played in the London Symphony Orchestra, and he ended up out your way, actually. He ended up in Victoria, and he created the Victoria Youth Orchestra. His name was Stuart Nusson. He was a great, great bass player and a great musician. And when he played in the London Symphony in England, it was all men, except for wow. The harpist was a woman. And so they go on the tour, that poor woman, because the orchestra would go on tour with all these men.
Oh my goodness.
So I'm sorry you never got to see a saxophone, but it's never too late, you know.
Well, yes. I play lots of saxophone. But you talk about the joy of playing. Were there times that your school went out and brought joy in the community in particular ways for particular events?
Well, you know, I was just going to say one of my life-changing activities was a group that we started, just musicians, we started together. It was called the Bach Consort, and it went Bach, as in J.S. Bach, Johann Sebastian Bach. We did one concert that turned into 20 years of fundraising concerts. And we would do, I don't know, 4 to 6 concerts a year of Bach, all Bach. Wow. You know, so his music, you know, goes back a ways. but it's music that the Toronto Symphony doesn't perform that often. He wrote over 300 cantatas. It's like he wrote a cantata for Sunday every week, you know, and each cantata is completely different. So it's with instruments that feature different instrumental solos. It's for different singers. Some have chorus, some have not. And then some are small, some are big. So it you could play Bach cantatas till the day you die, and you wouldn't play the same one twice. So anyway, we started with this group. We did one fundraising concert for a group called Camp Hill Village, Ontario. And Camp Hill has these spaces around the world, mostly rural communities for adults with disabilities, mostly intellectual disabilities. And at the time, there's one in Ontario. So we did a concert to raise money for them. And it was a really wonderful, moving experience. And we got to play this incredible music with singers. And again, through our soprano, Monica Witcher, we got to meet all these singers. So it's great for instrumentalists to meet singers and to work with singers and to be introduced to this world of music that like I say, we normally don't play in the Toronto Symphony. Well, this led to, like I say, 20 years of concerts where we raised over $400,000 for different charities. Wow. We recorded two CDs. One of them I'll talk about a little bit later, but we went to the charity Camp Hill Village, Ontario, which is not a big charity with lots of money, but we said, look, give us $10,000, we'll record a CD and we'll sell it as a fundraiser. Well, that's a big ask. It's a big risk. So they did. They gave it to us, and we recorded this wonderful CD called Bach Consort at Camp Hill, we sold like something like $75,000 worth of the darn CD, and just by having it played on CBC, and it was kind of a classical hit, for us. And so that was wonderful. And then another organization for adults with disabilities called LARSH, which is another worldwide community. They asked us to make a CD for them, which we did, and we performed on their annual big fundraiser, and they raised over $100,000 that night. So it was just sort of fantastic. And because we were performing for organizations like this and others in Toronto, we played for many, many different charities. The audience was diverse. It wasn't a usual concert going audience. There were people that love Bach that would come, but then also people associated with the charity. So right from the get-go, we had people come to our concerts that were nonverbal, and they would, make noises and stuff like that. But it was just wonderful. It just sort of, it was totally different, because we were connecting with the community. We were giving back. Somebody came up with the expression giving Bach to the community, which I thought was kind of fun. So we started doing bigger and bigger pieces, and then we had a choir come for the first time. And my teacher, another teacher of mine from Edmonton, where I grew up, he was in Israel playing with the Israel Philharmonic. And he said, instead of doing bits and pieces of cantata, oh, there's Zeus. That's our dog.
Hi, Zeus.
he's got an excellent voice too. So hopefully he'll stop barking in a second. But my teacher said that, Zeus, that's enough. he said, instead of doing bits and pieces that feature an instrument and a singer, why don't you just do a whole cantata? And so that's what we ended up doing. And we started inviting conductors, and we ended up having some of the world's great conductors come and perform for free. We all performed for a tax receipt, so none of us got paid money for it. But we had for instance, the man who's now the conductor of the Metropolitan Opera and also the Philadelphia Orchestra, Canada's most famous and, in my opinion, most wonderful conductor, Yannick Nezet-Séguin. He came as a young man when nobody in Toronto even knew who this fellow was. And we ended up doing the Christmas Oratorio, which is a great piece at Christmas. It's 3 hours long. We would start the concert at 6:30. We'd go till 8 o'clock, and then our audience of 500 would go downstairs where they were fed by our volunteer, because they get a wonderful meal and a glass of wine or two, and then they troop back upstairs to the second concert, which is that would take us to, I don't know, we finished at 10 or 10:30 or something like that, and it was just an incredible experience. And Yannick came back 4 more times after that. We performed with him, we did the B minor mass, we did sort of the great big pieces of Bach, and it was just a life-changing experience. But we had other fantastic conductors as well. But the reason these conductors came is because they knew we loved, if we were performing for free, they knew that it was for the love of the music. And so they wanted to be part of that. And so we were very, very, very fortunate.
I think it's such a great example of how a person's passion for something spilling over to a group, so electric that you could have people come and not charge you a fortune to play, but just get excited about serving people, helping people, changing the atmosphere by bringing their music.
Yeah. Yes. Anyway,
all of that talk about Bach, it's morning time. Maybe we should share a piece with our audience.
Okay. All right.
Well, what would you recommend?
Well, funny you should ask. Charlotte, you were asking me for something that maybe I'm performing on. Well, during COVID, everything shut down. The orchestra wasn't playing. We were performing from our own homes, and musicians started doing this thing, which was just unheard of before, where we would record in our own homes and have people around the world record in their own homes, and we'd put it all together. Well, I mean, if you remember, I mean, this, there was no need for it before COVID, of course. So we did a video called Bach to the Bar, B-A-R-R-E, and it features 2 incredible dancers from the National Ballet. When we got them, I didn't realize how famous they were, but they're 2 of the lead dancers. And we did a very, very fun video of them at home with their kids dancing in their living room. And there's even a vacuum cleaner that makes an entrance. So, we can play the music. It's the air from the 3rd orchestral suite of J.S. Bach. And I encourage your listeners to have a look. It became kind of a hit for the Toronto Symphony. It was just a small group and the dancers. And we all recorded in our own homes. And it was just such a pleasure. So it's a beautiful piece that I think everyone will recognize.
Yeah, I think new technology came about through that, being able to edit people playing from their home and bring it all together.
Yes. And imagine if we all had shares in Zoom, right?
Right. Whoever heard of it? Zoom was a mic that, we used at the radio station to go out and do streeters or on the street recordings. And then, boom, here's this multi-million-dollar worldwide company called Zoom.
Yeah. Thank you.
Good morning. Good morning. This is Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C, here at the Place to Be, CJSF Radio 90.1 in Burnaby, BC, streaming worldwide at cjsf.ca. This morning, my guest is Tim Dawson. We are talking about his passion, his purpose, the ways that he has excited and got involved with other people whose cause is to make the world a better place through music. You just heard a piece from Bach, and we're going to be back into more Bach. We're going to be bocking around. So, Tim, how have you found children's response? Have you found, had any opportunities to excite children or work with children in the way that people excited you as a youth to get involved?
Yeah, well, that's it's a great question because it's another one of my passions. And again, for 20 years, things happened a lot for 20 years. We had a program at the Toronto Symphony called Adopt a Player. And we were trained, first of all, to improvise. And improvisation for classical musicians is different from jazz musicians. It's not necessarily following a chord structure. It's sort of a whole different kettle of fish. But starting with that, then a musician from the orchestra would go into a class of grade 5 or 6 children and spend 6 weeks with them. We would go in once a week for a whole morning or an afternoon, and together with the kids, using percussion instruments, whatever instrument they had available or instruments they could bring from home, we would create a piece of music with the kids. And that piece could involve art, dance, movements, stories, anything the kids brought to the table. They could have a theme, and then at the end of it, we would get together on a sharing evening, and there would be a bunch of schools with different musicians, and then we would share our pieces for the parents and the other musicians. And I had people come up to me 10 years later and talk about their piece. Wow. And the difference was that, you know, normally somebody would come in and teach them a song or a piece of music and they'd perform it, which is great and wonderful. But this music came from the kids, and it was their passion that brought the music forward. And so consequently, it had a profound effect. So this went on for a long time, and that whole concept is just stunning. And I'm actually in conversation with a fellow, he's up in James Bay, because you know, I would love to take this concept into communities, you know, where the youth are struggling, and you know, because I find that often that, like, because we did this program in poor schools and in rich schools. And interestingly, you know, I had this naive impression that the rich schools, it would be the best experience, and you know, because the kids would be the most motivated. I found the exact opposite. We'd go into schools where the kids, you know, it just lower economic status, whatever. Oh my goodness, the ideas and the music that came out of these kids and their interest and their engagement was so wonderful. And so I think it's a tremendously healing, or it can be tremendously healing. Music is, it transforms people. Even going to a concert, you know, in these days, we talk about that in the Toronto Symphony, how in the age of TikTok, which, you know, how do you get people to sit still without looking at their phones for 2 hours? And it is a challenge, but if you have somebody older that knows the ropes, that can just come and sit with you, even just once, doesn't it? You don't have to have this older person, but it's lovely. My wife was sitting beside someone at a concert who brought a teenage, I don't know, grandchild or daughter, or whatever, and she was explaining things and just you know, because it's a bit intimidating. And I liken it to, you know, if you didn't go to church as a child, and then suddenly at the age 30, someone says, well, you have to go to church. Well, it would be a bit weird because you wouldn't know any of the rituals. It might be a bit intimidating or off-putting, you know. So my job, our job as musicians is to say, no way, man, like, come, and you don't have to know a darn thing. You just have to come and turn your darn phone off and sit back and enjoy the experience, because it actually changes you. And I bet you there are scientific studies that show, you know, test your neurons at the beginning of a concert and then after a concert. And I remember as a student, I just come out flying afterwards. I just felt so good.
With CJSF being part of the college radio community of stations, this would be a good time to inject some music, because it's intergenerational. Sometimes people do have this perception, well, you know, younger people wouldn't like it, or kids wouldn't like it, or teens, but the work that you're doing is showing that that idea of just come as you are and sit still a minute and listen, you can have a major difference in your joy or energy for the day.
Well, it's such an important topic at this time. And we're having meetings as an orchestra, and every orchestra is talking about this, DEI, or diversity, equity, and inclusion. So we want to broaden our audience, and we want to broaden the background of the people that are playing in an orchestra. So for instance, in the Toronto Symphony, we have one black musician, poor guy, all by himself, but luckily he's a very relaxed fellow. And it speaks to, you can't just say, well, we would like to have more people of color playing in our orchestra. Well, no, because it goes to exposure as children, it goes to education, because of course, you know, it has to be excellent. You just can't just go out and hire somebody because they're a person of color. No, you want to hire the best trumpet player or the best whatever. And there are many people of color that are excellent, but it's a big issue, and I think it's also an opportunity for us to expand our audience. And I actually have an idea that I've pitched to the Toronto Symphony, and I'll share it with you today.
And what is that idea? Yes, you're talking about causes.
Well, my idea is called the Wheel of Color. And I invite anybody to take this idea and run with it. But where, say, over the period of 2 or 3 years, we use the calendar year to explore the traditions of different cultures. So we might look at, so around Christmas time, well, there's other cultures have their own things, and they might not necessarily have classical music in there, say, with an Indian population, which is huge in Toronto, like orchestral music might not be a thing, but hey, we'll find music, we'll arrange music, you know. And then at the same time, we can explore the food and the culture and the dance and make it exciting and interesting for the audience and for the musicians as well. And at the same time, inviting new people to our concerts just changing kind of what an orchestra is, because generally we've been playing the music of dead white men for centuries, generally. But I'm happy to say that that's all changing with the Toronto Symphony. We're really moving forward. And at the same time, we have apparently the youngest average age of an orchestra in North America, mostly due to this fabulous program called Soundcheck, which some young fella in our marketing department a few years ago started. And it was an internet-based thing. And if you were aged 15 to 35 years old, you could sign up online for Soundcheck, and then you could come for $19 to pretty well any concert, and you could bring a guest of any age with you. And consequently, we have a very young audience, and my wife comes, and she's just so impressed and so happy to see this. And my daughter, who's also a musician, she trained in the United States, and she would go to, you know, wonderful, wonderful orchestras in the U.S. And it was completely different. It just, compared to our Toronto audience, which is so lively and so full of young people, she was just shocked that often it would be not that, because she thought it was like that everywhere.
My show is called Saluwa, Speak Up, Listen Up, Act Upon What You've Heard. And one of the things in this 3P and 2C series is that you could share contacts. So you mentioned a couple of groups. Is there a way, if someone wanted to contact you for more information about either of these programs?
You're talking about Adopt a Player. That doesn't exist anymore, but I'm passionate about making that happen anywhere, anytime. So they can reach me through the Toronto Symphony. I'm on the musicians page there. That's easy to do, or on, you know, Facebook or anything like that. Tim Dawson, Double Bass Toronto. And the other thing is called Soundcheck, and you just go to tso.ca.
Slower. Betty just got her pin.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So tso.ca, and look for Soundcheck. That's one word, Soundcheck. And people can sign up for that if they live in the Toronto area. I know most of your listeners are out in Vancouver, but, you know, it's a program that has been so successful for us. I think it can be duplicated elsewhere, Victoria, Vancouver.
All the way across, because we've talked about, you know, how important music is for just peace of mind, stimulation, circulation, even how people imagine their life to be. But you said where some kids never had a chance or an opportunity, by having this program, to hold an instrument in their hand or have somebody measure their height for an instrument. So I think it's a wonderful thing for people to know about. Or if they don't have their community, contact you and say, how can we get this happening, you know, where we are?
Well, you know, like, it was just pure dumb luck for me that my parents saw the article in the Edmonton Journal about this program in Edmonton. There's no way I would have ever seen a double bass, because we never had strings in our school, in our high school, or junior high school. So it was incredible. And that one little thing changed my life completely, because now I've had a 43-year career in an orchestra that's toured the world. I've played with unbelievable musicians. It's just been the best life I could possibly imagine. So just this weekend, it's a piece of music that I'd love you to play, just to give your listeners a little treat. If it's okay, I'll tell you about it now.
Definitely. I'd love to hear about it now. And okay, then you can play it. Yes.
All right. Well, this weekend with the Toronto Symphony, we played a very exciting concert with the young British cellist named Sheku Kenny Mason. And that name might not mean anything to you, but he was the young black cellist that played at the wedding of Harry and Meghan. And I think he was like 16 at the time. And you might remember him. He was quite incredibly poised and wonderful. And do you remember him, Charlotte?
Yes, I do remember, and I would love, you know, to hear it and for our audience to get to hear it.
Well, he's now 23 years old, and he came and just blew us away. Like, it was so wonderful. He played the Elgar Concerto for orchestra, and that's a staple for cellists. But it's just one of the great pieces written just after the First World War, and just reflects Elgar's deep, deep sorrow about, the after effects of the First World War and what the whole world lived through. But it's just absolutely gorgeous music. And there's a classic recording by the great British cellist Jacqueline Dupré, that I'd love you to play a little bit because it's considered the classic. But then your listeners can also listen because apparently, so Jacqueline Dupre, who's now passed away, she died quite young. I think it was Parkinson's or anyway, yeah, she sadly passed away young. But she recorded this when she was 20 years old, and it's sort of the recording of the Elgar Concerto. But then it turns out that Sheku recorded it when he was 20 years old, and he's sort of the first British cellist that kind of can be mentioned in the same breath as Jacqueline, the great Jacqueline Dupre. So your listeners can look up his recording as well. But I'd love it if you played the part of the last couple of minutes of the Elgar Cello Concerto.
Back from listening to that beautiful piece of music suggested and shared with us by our guest, Tim Dawson from the Toronto Symphony. And he has got a passion for music that is just igniting and infectious for others. Infectious in a good way, because you can take it in and be not falling asleep in class, have a deeper, those of us who are still in snow or rain, have a little bit more zip in your step. But I want to come back to Tim and ask you, why did you pick that particular piece?
Well, the Toronto Symphony just this weekend played the Elgar Concerto with the great cellist Sheku Kenny Mason, who's a young 23-year-old cellist. He's just brilliant. And I just wanted to tell you quickly, he played an encore at the first concert that was stunning. And then the second concert, he played an encore because the audience just went nuts and the place was packed because he, you know, when he played at the wedding of Harry and Meghan, he basically had the best advertising on the planet because I think billions of people watched that wedding. And the Brits, they know how to do ceremony and they know how to do music, you know, so it was a good show. And so he had good advertising. Consequently, the hall was just jammed and people loved his thing. So he did an encore. And so he started playing the cello and then suddenly he started whistling. Well, we'd never heard anything like this. And his whistling was great. It was beautiful. It was rhythmic. It was in tune. It was just gorgeous. And he was playing a completely separate part on the cello. So it's like he divided his brain into two parts. And we were sitting there stunned. And the audience, none of us, expected this, of course. So if you ever get a chance to see Sheku live, maybe he'll play the whistling encore and it'll blow your mind. That's why I chose that piece of music.
Well, maybe in the way things have occurred in your life, maybe you might be a part of bringing him to Toronto or Vancouver to play.
Yeah, well, I won't be involved in that because he's pretty big fish.
But you've had some big fish come from just mentioning, the types of things or the idea of doing concerts that raise money for a program, et cetera. Could you share a bit, too, about people who are developing ways of making money, but it's not in the old capitalist system, but in a system that kind of relates to nonprofits, but also enabling individuals within a nonprofit to profit from their work?
Thank you so much for asking, Charlotte. Means so much to me. It turns out that I've been doing this all my life, and I'll tell you what it is. There's a fellow in Manitoba, his name's Sean Loney. He's written a bunch of books about something called social enterprise. And that is, he describes it as, on the right hand, maybe you have purely for-profit businesses. On the left hand, you have charity. And then somewhere in the middle, there's something called social enterprise. And that's an activity or a business that benefits a great number of people, and it makes money. So it's this kind of middle ground and this fellow Sean Loney has started dozens of social enterprises. Some of them, I saw him describe, he started off with a table and a whiteboard and a marker. That's how he started. And then it ended up as $8 million businesses that benefited people. So he's working with First Nations in Manitoba. And so his concept is that you go into a place where there's a problem. And he mentions a place called Garden Hill in Manitoba, where there was a problem on a reserve of not good food being available. Like food was really expensive and not available. So he took the idea of it being a problem and flipped that over and saw opportunity. So then they started a social enterprise where they brought in good food at decent prices, using local employees, and it's, of course, it just took off. It was just so successful, and so that's just one example. And he's, like I say, he's written several books about this concept. Well, I've been organizing concerts, chamber music concerts, I mentioned the Bach Consort. We raise money for different charities, but also I've been involved with various churches all my life, not because I'm particularly religious. I really love the idea of community and people working, for the greater good, I think religion gets in the way sometimes, but I love the idea of people coming together and just being nice to each other. Like, it's just such a good concept, right? Like, what's bad about that, right?
It's particularly important today when we've had so many mean words and so much hostility. It's extremely beneficial and important.
Yeah, it gets more important as we go on. And my dad was a church organist, and he went to church because of the music. He was quite open about that. I've been organizing concerts that also happen to raise money. So in past churches, I've done concerts that raise money for the organ or this, that, and the other thing, and had some really, really fun shows. I also played in a Also, for 15 years, we had a group called, the boring name was the Toronto Symphony Double Bass Quartet. The more interesting name was Bastiality. And we started again with one concert, and it turned into 50 years of hilarity, where we played jazz and classical, and we did skits. It was the idea for some of these things was by an older colleague of mine that had grown up in the vaudeville times. So he had these wacky skits that we would do. We would play with four double basses and saxophone, with singers, with drummers, with anyway, that's another story. But that did remind me of doing concerts in a church. We had a routine. I'm getting off on the sideline here, but we did a thing called Bass Man and Rosin, similar to Batman and Robin. And so we would dress up in these silly costumes. I was Rosin, so I wore my underwear on the outside of my pants, and we would do this silly skit. The minister at this church, he loved our group, and he insisted that we come back every year. So the skit involved the bassmobile, which is a double bass with the top taken off on wheels, and the bassman would sit in the bassmobile, and Rosin, that was me, would push this thing, and it always crashed in the concert. That was part of the routine. And then so we would start at the back, run to the front, and then we'd have to run downstairs and come back where we would change. So when we were doing this one concert, I never forget, we didn't realize there was an Alcoholics Anonymous concert going on, not a concert, a meeting in the basement. So suddenly these guys in costumes with a mask over their face come running through, one guy wearing underwear and outside his pants. Hey, it was just a funny memory. But the idea, concerts generally lose money. They're not money making ventures, but by getting sponsors over the years, I've been organizing concerts that raise money for different things, and the Bach concert was a good example. But now, since 2014, my wife and I go to Kingston Road United Church, where we've been putting on concerts that make money for the church. And in particular, right now, we've just had to put a new roof on the church, and that darn thing cost over $1 million. And so we have to have many fundraisers. But because we have sponsors that pay the expenses of our concerts, then the ticket money coming in can go to maintenance of this beautiful building and help things move forward. So that's an example of social enterprise. And it leads to one of, I think, an important tenet of any kind of social enterprise, any kind of activity, really. And that is, it's the simple idea that if there's a good idea, people will fall in with that. Good ideas lead people, it's like you want an idea that has legs, and then people can get behind it. And then the other thing is something that my sister taught me many, many, many years ago. And I'll tell you why she taught me this. We were doing a concert with Bastiality, our double bass quartet, at a brewery, and we were playing a piece called a rock etude, and it was a clapping exercise for four players. It was written for percussionists, and it was in rock rhythms, and so each of us had a different rhythm. And then we thought, well, if it's called a rock etude, why don't we use rocks instead of clapping, and we'll bang rocks together. So I was talking to my sister Leslie, who lives in Edmonton. She's a poet, and she and I have collaborated many times over the years. She said, I want you to call the head of the geology department at U of T and ask him to come and give a dissertation on your rocks. And I just laughed, and I said, are you kidding? The head of the geology department? There's no way he'll come. And she said, no, I want you to do this. She said, in my experience, the top people are the ones that say yes. They got to their positions because they're open, and they say yes to ideas. They say yes to life. That's how they got to those positions. The people kind of lower down, They're good at saying no, but the top people say yes. So anyway, long story short, I called him and he said, sure. And I couldn't believe it. So he showed up like literally 10 minutes before the concert. He was wearing a white lab coat and we were in the back of a brewery and the place was just packed because with your ticket, you got free beer.
Wow.
And we had the young new music director of the Toronto Symphony was playing violin with us. His name was Saraste. He was a Finnish fellow. And so people were excited about seeing him as well. And so then before we played the rock etude, this professor who was used to talking to 400 students at a time, no problem. He gave a dissertation on each of our rocks, what kind of rocks they were. It was complete baloney, like, you know, he made up funny stuff. And then he related it to the personality of each of the players. Again, not knowing us, but it was totally brilliant, totally off the cuff, and the audience was in stitches. But that taught me this very, very important idea of asking the top people, and that led to, with our Bach concert, asking these incredible conductors, and they said yes, and they came and they did it for charity, for free, like all,
wow,
of them. So that idea has been central to my life. And so currently we're at Kingston Road United Church and we do four concerts a year, and the musicians and the level of musicians that have come and played for us has just been staggering. And they say yes. It's
yes.
Just, I feel humbled all the time. And they come and they love it. And the audience comes and they love it. And to give you an example, we did a concert this weekend that was just incredible. Bach. We played Bach.
But
we did a thing called a side-by-side concert. And I'm very proud of this concept. It's Toronto Symphony musicians playing beside their students from the University of Toronto. And so we played a beautiful program. And the principal cellist of the TSO, Joe Johnson, he played a concerto by C.P.E. Bach, who is the son of J.S. Bach. And when we played a Bach orchestral suite as well. Anyway, then we repeated the program at the University of Toronto last night. But the difference there was quite a formal audience. And the audience at our church, because they're so used to these events, it was just so warm and lovely. And at the same time, in intermission, we had another fundraising project because we've had to replace the roof. Well, these 100-year-old slate tiles have come off the church, and we've invited about 25 artists to paint these 100-year-old
wow.
tiles, which we then sell and split the proceeds with the artists. So the artist can make $50 and the church makes $50. Well, we sold 7 tiles at this concert, and we've been selling them and showing them online. And it's this crazy idea has really, really worked. And again, the artists love it because artists are poor, and you know, make $50. Well, that's a good thing. And so, if any of your listeners are know somebody in Toronto that's an artist, we invite all we ask is that we can sell the darn thing, you know. So we so we're trying to, and we have hundreds of tiles left. So it's another example of like an idea that's just kind of taken off. So for me, this is all social enterprise at its best.
Wow, this is such a connection at its best. We've got the passion, purpose, a good idea of how to contact you. And for people who just have heard no so much, to be able to contact you, to hear that idea of start at the top, ask the people who are used to saying yes. But thank you again for sharing that information, sharing your life. Tim, we would love to venture to Toronto to hear you play. But is there another piece of music you can suggest that we listeners could find and listen to during the day if we don't have the time to play the whole piece within our show? There's a third piece that you thought would be particularly inspiring.
Well, if you can find it, it's the Bach Consort at Camp Hill, and there's any selection from that CD, and this is the one that I'm just so proud of it because it was connected with this place for adults with disabilities, and it was just a project from the heart. And any of the pieces from there, I would recommend. It's just a matter of finding it, and it's probably online somewhere. I just
Probably
don't
on
know where.
YouTube somewhere. Well,
Yeah.
that's been such an example of what Suluwa is. Speak up, listen up, act upon what you've heard. So you guys have heard a lot. I've never knew so much about Bach. Now I'm going to go Baching along the day.
Well, check out
And
the Christmas Oratorio too. It's just, actually there. You can play that piece of music. The last bit, the last of the Christmas Oratorio by Bach, it's from the sixth cantata. There's six cantatas, and it's just got the greatest trumpet parts. And that's what got me so charged up about that, because Bach really knew how to write for the trumpet.
Oh, well, we're charged up about getting in contact with you. And you mentioned the musician's page on the Toronto Symphony. What is that web address?
Well, again, that'd be through tso.ca, and then you can find the musicians. I'll get Charlotte, I'll give you my email address too, and people can contact you, and if they want to reach out to me.
All right. Well, thank you so much. We just enjoyed a lesson. You did a master class on social marketing and doing this I'm sorry.
A social enterprise idea.
Yes. And I was trying to get the exact name of it. I know it's a form of social marketing.
Yeah. And if people want to know more about that, I encourage them to look up Sean Loney, because he's amazing. And it was just fun listening to him, because I realized, oh, that's what we've been doing all this time, and I didn't even know it.
Right. So it just emphasizes the possible instead of people looking at what can't be done and how far we have to go. You've given us so many examples of ways that we can go that not only build community, brings people to church without feeling like they have to be join the church, but to see the church as a place where community spirit, community enterprise, where things can grow and foster. So thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's been a real pleasure.
Okay. Well, for those of you that were here from 10, I've invited you to come again next week at 10. But when people ask me what time it is, I say it's always love time, poem time. Love time, poem time. Love time, poem time. Love time, poem time. Time for words from heaven to shine. Love time, poem time, time for words to pattern and rhyme. Love time, poem time, time for words to wash the wounds, bind the lashes, and play bassoon. Love time, poem time, time for poems, poets and singers, time to untie.